Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens. I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. And today we've got almost 5,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. But if you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be talking about effective SEO with the director of Session Media, Ben Brown. I'll be talking effective business in COVID times with the account director of Bourne Agency, Sean Cole. And effective social media with the co-founder of Plannable, Xenia Muntean. Search engine optimization has long been a key component of a digital marketing strategy, but today it's being combined with intent marketing. This so-called creative SEO is said to offer business marketers better results. I'm joined to talk about creative SEO by Ben Brown, who's the director of Session Media. Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, David. Great to be on.
It's good to see you. So before we get started, tell us a bit about Session Media.
Yeah, sure. No problem. So Session Media are primarily a B2B search engine marketing company based in Surrey. Our mission, as it were, is to really tangibilize SEO and PPC in the B2B space. I think historically, there's quite a lot of stigma around the industry, and maybe it's come across as quite a spammy industry with some bad experiences people have had in the past. And I believe really that people think things happen on a technical level, you know, a couple of technical tweaks, a couple of content tweaks in the background, and that either does or most of the time doesn't actually work. And they kind of lose faith in the industry as a whole, and then, you know, kind of ignore it as a channel and kind of write it off. What we're trying to do is say, these are the actions and deliverables that should be there from an SEO in particular front, and what we're talking about today really. These are the deliverables, and we're not just doing them because they're best SEO practices. We're doing them because we actually want to tie them back into measurable results for, you know, bottom line, lead generation, whatever it may be. It's not just there because it's a checkbox. It should be done because it's a channel that drives real results for your business. The B2B specialism really came in as you know, being a B2B, the nuances of the buying journey is obviously a lot different to the B2C. It's not just first touch point a lot of the time, and there's a lot more variables going on in that longer term buying cycle. So what we try and do is educate our clients and the market around the role the search engine marketing plays within these buyer journeys and where you should be allocating your spend in order to see the most success and scaling it up, and how you really look at attribution as well. So you shouldn't just look at that last touch point attribution and see what people filled the form out. You should really take it all the way back to the months previous to really find out how they found out about your brand, how you educated them, and obviously how they then made their decision process to get in contact with your B2B company.
Okay, and so there's a lot to get your teeth into there. Let's though start with the basics, right?
Sure.
So can you provide me with a top level overview of SEO for those who are new to the channel?
Sure, no worries. And if those of you who are completely new to the acronym, obviously it stands for Search Engine Optimization. And in its simplest form, it's the process of ranking your website at the top of search engines in the organic listings when someone types in a query or keyword related to your product or service. So ultimately, someone will type something in, like us, for example, SEO agency, and you want to appear at the top because that's the moment of what we call intent, compared to the likes of social media or email marketing, when you can target a particular demographic, which is great, and create awareness. What you have with the opportunity of SEO and search engine marketing as a whole is you can literally appear in front of people at the time they're searching or researching your product or service that you offer, which makes it a very valuable piece of real estate. So that's SEO in theory about what it is. The way we break down SEO and going back to how we tangibilize the channel in itself is we have three main pillars we talk clients through. I held three fingers up there just for, I know you haven't got a camera on, but yeah, three main pillars, if that helps. So the first one, and I won't go too much into it, is around technical SEO. This is everything from making sure that your website can be rendered, crawled, and indexed. Simply, it pretty much means, does it load fast? Can Google's bots actually get the context and read the content of your site? And is it mobile friendly, etc.? Once you've got the technical down and best practices moving forward, we'll talk about keywords and content. So ultimately, you want to find the keywords and search terms which people are using to find your product or services online. No point in writing or trying to optimize for keywords that people aren't interested in or aren't searching for, because you know, you'll appear in front of no one potentially. And then once you've got the keywords, optimizing that content to make sure that you completely fulfill the user's intent with your search query. End of the day, Google is just a relevance engine. So if you can completely fulfill the user search and you have the best option to click on, then yeah, it's going to be very favorable in the eyes of Google and the user. And finally, the bit today, which we'll be talking about mostly, is building authority, which is where the creative aspect comes into SEO the most, as well as content. But building authority, and I've got a feeling you're going to ask me more about it in a second, but SEO authority is pretty much saying to a website, we've got a strong technical foundation, we've got good content, and the keywords are going after. How can we, in the eyes of Google, make another search engines make our website look authoritative, which comes in the form of backlinks from third-party websites? So if a company has the same technical makeup, the same content in theory, but one has a link from a really well-regarded website like The Guardian or, you know, an industry press publication, 9 times out of 10, they're going to start ranking above them because Google sees them as the authority in the space. So that's where the creativity comes in and really trying to get Google to see you as an authority in the space.
And that authority building is what we're referring to as creative SEO, right?
So yes, so that in itself would be called link building, building authority. The creativity comes to applying how you go about building those links, and that's really where that creative element comes in. As you probably know, the B2B space and why we focus in it and why we love it so much isn't always that fascinating to the mainstream media. So getting links outside of your, or getting publications to write about your industry or your company outside of your very specific niche is quite hard, because obviously it's very narrow. Only people in the industry care about it. So air compressors, or commercial air compressors, for example, you know, you wouldn't see the likes of BBC writing about commercial air compressors as a product or service. And that's kind of where people pigeonhole themselves in trying to build an authority site in B2B. So where the creativity comes in, link building, is trying to work out what associations your product has to something that the mainstream media would be all interested in publishing. So you can get published in both the mainstream media, the big sites, and the industry press. Both of these links, and let's call it digital PR placements, are going to help you rank for the keywords which are the most profitable for you. And that's where the creativity comes in. So to give you an example, on the same vein as the air compressor example I went into, is we actually have a client who works in commercial air compressors, and they wanted to rank top for a number of their commercial air compressor terms. So rather than trying to flog a white paper or like a technical doc or whatever, a text spec or whatever it may be, we looked at the applications around air compressors in commercial enterprise. So what we found is, you know, they use quite heavily in the consumer packaged goods industry. So ultimately, all the bags of popcorn and bags of crisps you have, all the air which preserves it, the air in the bags of popcorn, are the ones that come from these air compressors. So we did this water displacement study, which actually found out how much air was in a bag of popcorn. So we submerged this, these bags of popcorn in our office about a year ago, and we saw how high the water went up, sucked all the air out, did it again, worked out the difference of how much was actually in the air bag of popcorn. We then cross-referenced it against the number or the amount it cost, and literally worked out how much you were paying for air in each bag of popcorn, and created this list of infographics, which listed the results. So that's the creativity I was showing, and the results of that were, you know, they, you know, ranked number one for a large, you know, host of the terms they were going after, because they're able to achieve links from likes of MSN, as well as lots of industry press.
It's not sounding like the sort of thing that is kind of going to be an overnight success, though. What's the timeline on this?
So yeah, good question. I'll probably answer that like a true SEO, and it depends. So it's how long was a piece of string question. Ultimately, I think it depends on two things. One, the competition of your industry. Are you going up against, you know, conglomerates in the space? And do you have an angle which will allow you to sort of reap, you know, that search market share away from them? Also, how far are you along your journey? If you've got a brand new site and you're still in the sandbox and Google doesn't quite trust you yet because you're a new site, it's going to take longer than if you had 15 years worth of, you know, traditional PR and other links to your site. So I'd ultimately say if you start doing it properly, you'll see some good movements and some good progress in about 6 months. If you don't, you're either way too early or you're doing it wrong. No, honestly, yeah.
And how do you make sure that you're ranking the right keywords?
So there's two main ways in which we can do this internally. The first one, which is my preference, is using the PPC ads. So what you can do is take your selection of keywords, do your keyword research, and you can quite quickly get up and running with some decent keyword research, some decent PPC ads, which you can quickly look at an ROI at a keyword level. So you can bid on these keywords and you can see which ones convert into leads and then get that feedback loop from the sales team and say, you know, well, these keywords are actually converting really well and we're getting quite a high average order value off the back of them. Mm-hmm. And you get that quite quickly in that feedback loop quite quickly. You can then translate that success into your organic strategy to say, these keywords here, we should be going after, even though I'll give you a good example, SEO agency versus SEO services. On the outset, on looking in, it looks like they have very similar intent. We know from running ads, for example, the SEO agency has a much higher price tag associated with that keyword versus SEO services. So we then go into our SEO strategy and try and rank for SEO agency as the primary keyword and services as a secondary. So it is a different search results page. So that's probably the best way I'd say is using data from PPC ads to inform your SEO strategy from the outset.
And finally, which businesses do this well?
So I've probably got enough case studies to talk for about 7 days on.
We haven't got 7 days. Companies. We've got about sort of 30 seconds.
Okay. I'd say probably an obvious one for what obviously we don't work with is HubSpot. They do a great way of, you know, creating content which is actually very linkable. My favorite one of them, and it's not necessarily being quite creative, is they realize that people like to reference stats around different items. So they rank number one for marketing stats and have collated all the stats under the sun around B2B marketing and marketing. So what people do when they're writing and researching things is type in marketing stats to reference something and link to it from as a sort of citation on their blog or publication. And even though HubSpot didn't do most of the studies on there, they're still linked back to because they've become the hub of where all these links have been curated. Again, it's very simple, and because they've got an authoritative site, they rank well for that term. So we'd probably call that like an evergreen link building strategy, which they've come across and implemented really well. So they're getting links every month from people citing the research and the collated data that they've put together.
That's a great example. Ben Brown, Director of Session Media. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
It's tough to run a marketing campaign in the age of lockdown. You've got to engage a new team virtually, and you've got to engage an audience when audience dynamics have changed. Time now then for a case study from Sean Cole, who's the account director of Born, into how organisations are coping with just that. Sean, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Nice to meet you, David.
It's good to see you. So first of all, tell us a bit about Born.
Born Agency have been going as a business, myself and my business partner Ben Trafford, for 4 years, going into our fifth year. Small team, started with just myself and Ben, who'd worked together previously at a much bigger agency. And when we felt the time was right, we started Born, and we've managed to retain a couple of what we class as very special designers that we've worked with previously. It took us a while to get them back into the team. They'd gone off to do other things, but yeah, we're wanting to grow, but we never want to be too big an agency. We like the idea of being a small boutique design agency.
Cool. Okay. And well, your agency was approached, I think, by Ecofon, who, is that how you pronounce it? Ecofon?
You do pronounce it Ecofon, yeah.
A manufacturer of acoustic panels, baffles and ceiling systems. Can you tell us a bit about the brief?
Certainly. They approached us. I'd actually worked with the managing director before in a previous, when he'd been in a previous role. So we had a nice relationship. And they got obviously thrown a swerveball because that each year they handle a sales conference / new product launch conference. COVID had hit, the pandemic. They were unable to bring large teams together like they normally do in perhaps a large conference center or a hotel, spend the weekend or a couple of days together talking. Unable to do that. The brief was quite simple. Help. What can we do? Please think outside of normal boxes. So
it's kind of fairly clear then for the client how COVID-19 made their ask a bit more difficult. I wonder if COVID also made your work as Bourne more difficult as well to be able to deliver against a brief like this.
There was an awful lot of thought went into how do we look at the project, how do we achieve what the client wants to achieve. There was an awful lot more. It wasn't just a case of a campaign, create messages, graphics and channels. It really was, you know, we've got a variety of people spread across England and Ireland that we had to engage with, think about technology, think about different broadband widths to communicate with them on the day, and then pre-plan the timing of it critically so things landed at the right time so they were prepared for the day as well. Mm-hmm. So an awful lot of thought went into it.
Okay, so how did you go about overcoming those challenges?
Well, really, the brief was fun, exciting, team building, as well as getting technical information across. So what do we all miss, and what did we all miss last summer? We missed being with groups, and we missed music festivals, and we missed fun. The brief was bring fun into it, which was quite an awkward one. So we created a music-themed festival style and design. And then we from that applied what you would normally expect from a music festival, and then tied that into the products and the product launch. So each product, the name of the product was designed as a band name. There was a tour t-shirt created. There was an animation created that was bespoke to each person. So when you undid this box that we created that was pre-sent, as you undid the box, your name appeared, the music started, the whole sort of crowd in the background cheering. And it was all to do relative back to the product, which is acoustic baffles, you know, so we went down the music theme. And it worked tremendously well, but there was a lot of elements in the box that they could interact with during the day. It was all set up to be QR coded so they can scan, find out further information, breakout rooms, coffee rooms. So it wasn't just a case of put them onto a Teams meeting, which was the last thing they wanted. They wanted interactivity and a fun element.
So what were the results of that?
The results we got were tremendous. The team thoroughly enjoyed the day. In fact, just before, the week before, we did get a call from the MD going, could you even do a music themed pub quiz for the evening? So that was another thing that was thrown into the equation. Tremendous feedback. The managing director was delighted. The team enjoyed it, were inspired. And actually, you know, we can't directly relate this, but we'd love to try. The sales figures have absolutely rocketed. The sales team have gone out with a spring in their step, although virtually. The product is going incredibly well.
Can you, is there any way of comparing the kind of the sales results that you've achieved as a result of doing this thing during COVID versus what they would have got from the actual live experience the year before?
They're telling us that they've tracked sales now. whether that is a mixture of the economy at the moment and the construction industry being quite buoyant, but they are saying that they are completely smashing all sales records that have been set by head office in Sweden. And they are still getting tremendous feedback from the team that enjoyed the day and the event in the way we did it, even to the extent where they've sort of said, are we doing this again next year? So even though next year we're all hoping to be back to normal, you know, they are, yes, fingers crossed, they are, you know, they enjoyed it tremendously. And that's the fantastic feedback we've got.
Great. So what learnings do you take away from this one, Sean?
Really, the fact that we need to really rethink potentially everything moving forward. You know, the money that was saved from that company without having to put people up in hotels and bar bills and travel expenses, actually, the way we did it was very economical. Mm. So it's released budget for other things that they can do. Mm. And I think, you know, it certainly made us think about other things in other projects in different ways. How we've approached our marketing even. You know, can we be doing things like this? Should we be doing more virtual meetings on projects and project management rather than traveling and doing, we're a face-to-face agency. We love that interaction and that will always happen with Bourne, but maybe to save clients time, maybe the third, fourth meeting could be done virtually. So yeah, it kind of makes you think outside the box a little bit more about everything.
So perhaps not a complete continuation, but something of a hybrid perhaps.
Yes, a hybrid. Yeah, it's a great way. Yeah, great way of looking at it. It's a hybrid of moving forwards and developing interaction.
Sean Cole, Account Director of Bourne. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The art of social media is a tough and underappreciated one. So let's get some tips about what the best in social media are doing right now. I'm joined by Zania Montan, the co-founder of Plannable. Zania, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me here, Dave.
It's great to have you. So before we dive in, tell us a bit about Plannable.
Yeah, of course. So Plannable is a collaboration tool for social media teams to help them work together on content for platforms such as Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and a bunch of other social media networks. And our product helps them collaborate, work together on the content, plan it, review it, approve it, and finally also distribute it to those platforms in the end. So it's kind of like a productivity superpower for social media teams.
Great. And you've just launched, I think I'm right in saying, the Social Teams 100. And the Social Teams 100 profiles the most successful social media teams of the last year.
Yeah, so more specifically, the teams that grew the most in 2020, which was a hard, very hard year for hiring in any sectors. So we wanted to celebrate the teams that grew the most in 2020, yeah.
And what do we mean by grow the most? Is that growing in terms of size, in terms of learning and development? You know, what makes up the most successful social media teams of the last year?
So there are a lot of criteria that make a team, a social media team, successful. We particularly for this research looked at headcount, the size of the team, which we know is just one of the criteria or one of the signals of a success, of a team's success. So we looked at the headcount, knowing that if you hired, if you grew your social media team as a brand, as an organization, in 2020, then you were probably doing something right. But of course, there's many more criteria to define a team's success. The size, some people could say is a vanity metric of success. But the other things, you know, we usually look at to define a team's success is basically, you know, the results. And there's a lot of metrics. The brand visibility, the brand awareness, the actual results on the business, like sales, revenue, if social media is used for employer branding purposes, how much it helps with hiring, so the ROI on that side. So it's usually correlated with the actual results. And yeah, you know, and there's a bunch of criteria to determine how a team and why a team is successful. But you know, one of those metrics that we looked at was size, particularly for this research.
And so, what makes some teams stand out in the social media space? Maybe if you those teams that grew last year, what was it that made them stand out in terms of social media?
Yeah, so I think there's a bunch of teams that grew a lot in 2020 that even doubled the size of their team. And everyone knows that with more people comes more complexity. So I think the teams that managed to be successful were the teams that managed to implement the right processes in place so that they can scale their teams. It's one thing to run a team that is two or three or a couple of people in the team, and it's completely different type of workflow when you get to 12 or a dozen. So in my opinion, the best teams are usually the most collaborative, the most agile, and the most lean teams, the ones that manage to have to do more with less, with less resources, with the, you know, with less people, and that, you know, really focus on the productivity and the processes of their team. Obviously on learning as well, developing the core skills of a social media team, such as, you know, analytical skills, creativity, the design part, the leadership part as well. But from what we've seen, the teams that really prioritized the processes that they build, the way they do work, and how collaborative they are, we've seen a lot of success in those teams.
And is it possible for us to drill down a bit further and be a bit more specific, you know? So are there particular processes that are more important, for example, than others?
Right, I think planning is one of the most important processes for social media teams, because social media teams are usually the teams that are the most, I don't know how to say it, the most requested ones, the teams that collaborate the most with other departments in an organization. They need to work together with marketing or PR, but they also need to work together with human resources, again, employer branding, or with product for any launches. They need to sometimes to work together with legal or compliance if they're in a regulated industry. So being able to plan their content and work together with a very diverse set of stakeholders is super, super important for social media teams.
And what about obstacles that the best social media teams have managed to overcome?
Yeah, I think approvals and safety mechanisms in a social media teams are very hard just because they're working with that many stakeholders. Most of the times they also have a lot of requirements from those stakeholders. They need to make sure that the content that they're building for social media, the posts that they're writing, everything that they're doing, the presence of the brand on social media, really checks a lot of boxes from a brand perspective, but a lot of boxes from what the stakeholders want to achieve, what HR wants to achieve with the social media presence, what legal, what product, what marketing wants to achieve, what sales wants to achieve with social media. So there's a lot of approvals and a lot of reviewing processes that need to be implemented. And you need to implement them in such a way that it doesn't stifle creativity. It doesn't become a blocker for how fast the social media team is moving, because they do need to move very fast. They're operating in a very dynamic market. There's a lot of real-time stuff that is happening on social media, and you need to be able to jump on those trends and on those real-time events in an efficient manner. So you need to kind of have an approval process that also allows your brand to have to be compliant, to have some safety mechanisms, to not send confusing messages that do not respect the same tone of voice, but also have that approval process in place without becoming too slow.
And what about the outcomes of good social media? Are there any over the last year that in particular you can point to?
I think the outcome of a social media team depends. There are dozens of goals and objectives you can focus on. And it really, you know, goes back to what are those objectives. Are you doing social media for brand awareness, or are you doing it to drive leads, to build your reputation? Is it about your employer brand? So it all goes back to that. And depending on what you're trying to achieve with social media, the results are also going to vary a lot. But what surprised me a lot in the past year, and also a couple of years, is how much more social media teams are focusing on ROI. It's not just about brand visibility anymore. You have a very, very diverse set of metrics that social media teams look at right now. It's not just how many fans or how many likes you have. It's much more than that. It goes beyond that. It goes into conversions. It goes into traffic that you bring to the website, and it actually goes into sales and revenue, if that's the type of objective that the business is looking for from social media.
And did you get a sense as to which businesses do social media well?
I think the businesses that do social media well are the ones that makes a lot of sense for them to do social media in the first place. Like, for example, consumer businesses, of course, or direct to consumer businesses, the ones that are actually selling on social media. They're born out of platforms like Instagram, for example, and they rely heavily on those platforms. So relying so heavily on those platforms, it makes a lot of sense for them to double down, to invest a lot in social media. So yeah, I would say most of the times we see a lot of success coming from consumer brands, and more specifically, even direct to consumer.
Xenia Montan, co-founder of Plannable, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Ben Brown, Sean Cole, and Xenia Montine. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn, and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. But I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.